I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. One of Kansas City's most important resources for the homeless is in trouble. The 24-hour emergency shelter for single adults run by Restart is getting ready to close, leaving the metro without its 90 beds and support services. Today, we'll learn about the battle Restart faces, how it ran out of funds, and what the loss of this shelter means for Kansas City. Later, would you date someone if they didn't share your political views? Do political opposites attract? An advice columnist will tell us if love really can conquer all when it comes to dating across party lines. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Kansas City's homeless problem is about to get a lot worse. The nonprofit homeless service agency Restart is starting to phase out its 90-bed shelter at 918 East 9th Street. KCPT's Flatland site quotes advocates for the homeless in town saying that the loss is going to be painful. The agency says it needs $1 million to get beds back online. Support services? That'll cost even more. What makes Restart different is that it administers to single adults. The facility welcomes members of the LGBTQ community, and the facility is open around the clock. Joining us now to talk about the plight of Restart and what this means for the homeless population in Kansas City is Stephanie Boyer. She's the CEO of Restart. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, what happened here? I mean, how did Restart wind up needing $1 million?
Yeah, so this, you know, issue I think has been occurring over a number of years. I just came on in January of 2019. And so as far back as I can really tell, this 90-bed program has always lacked appropriate funding. And so it's been a struggle. I think it's a challenging population to raise dollars for. There's a lot of judgment and myths, I think, about why single persons are experiencing homelessness in our community. And definitely, I think over some years ago, as HUD shifted their funding sources at the federal level away from emergency shelter and emergency housing and into more permanent supportive housing and housing first model, any dollars at the federal level went away years ago to support kind of the emergency housing and shelter model.
Why do single adults need emergency housing? What do you see going on out there?
So we see a lot of different issues within that population. The biggest thing that we really see is the lack of affordable housing in our community. One of the things that's a little bit different about our emergency shelter is that it's a program. People enter into the program. They're not required to leave every day. It's not just shelter overnight. It's shelter around the clock. So people come into the program, and many of our adults in that program are working jobs. Many of them are working multiple jobs. A lot of them are working second and third shift jobs, so they need to be able to sleep during the day, which works for the program for them at Restart, and won't work for if their only option is an overnight sleeping option. So, it's not that they can't afford anything, it's that they can't afford where they were living. They're struggling to make enough dollars to really be able to afford a place on their own without subsidy or a voucher. Mm-hmm. We see people struggling with major medical issues. They've lost their housing due to that. People have faced evictions for a number of reasons, from medical issues to loss of employment, to divorce, to lots of different scenarios.
So the closing of Restart would take place when? The end of the month?
Well, so Restart as an agency is certainly not closing. We run 17 different programs. And so this is one of our 17 programs. So the adult single beds is a program that is unfunded, and we are phasing out those beds. So we have 90 of those beds available. And right now, what we've been doing over the last few weeks is as people are exiting the program and entering back into stable housing, we have not been refilling those beds. So currently we're sitting at about 55 beds. And so we'll continue that process unless there are dollars identified to help sustain some of those beds. Mm-hmm. So we anticipate over probably the next, I would say, 45 days or so, that will continue that attrition process.
Well, there's an ordinance slated to be introduced at City Hall tomorrow that would provide $250,000 to Restart to support some of your services. What do you know about that proposal and what kind of difference it might make?
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, that request is, you know, to help support some of those beds. It won't support all of them. And so that is part of the discussion that we have had. Is that, you know, we have several options depending on the amount of dollars that can be brought in. We'll have to determine, you know, as dollars become available, what that looks like. So whether we keep all of them for a short period of time or whether we commit to a specific number over the rest of the year that would help support, or and how we really split that up between male beds and female beds. Because currently we have 48 beds for men and 42 for women. And so we certainly know there's definitely not capacity for 42 female beds in the community. So anywhere. So that is of great concern. So we'll have to kind of balance that and determine, like, you know, how many beds of which that can continue to support.
Hmm. Have there been any signs of anybody else stepping forward to help out here, Stephanie?
You know, we have a lot of great funding partners in our community, and we've been meeting with folks, and definitely they want to help in whatever way that they can. A lot of them are limited with their funding sources and the type of things that they can support. So they want to help in other ways. But so far we've had one funder, talk with us that we can make a request, to help support a few of these beds. Outside of that, it's been, through the city. Other than that, we haven't really received, you know, a lot of, interest. It's definitely been a population that for many, many years has been a struggle to, support, but it's absolutely, you know, critical, because we will see this cost, in other places such as emergency services and other places.
So the cost is just going to shift, you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
And be more expensive and far less effective, right? It's going to keep people in this cycle of homelessness, and it's going to cost the city and the community a whole lot more dollars and have no real viable into it. So, you know, housing people, giving them a safe, stable place to be and providing the support to wrap around them like we do, they're able to get that case management, access to mental health, substance use, employment services, all on site here at Restart. So it very much provides, you know, a comprehensive approach to them. Our goal is to ensure that the people we serve have a path and exit
right
from homelessness and back into stable housing.
Well, speaking of help, let me bring in Dave from Smithville, who just called us at 816-235-2888. Dave, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, I just wanted to let you know, and possibly if you could help advertise this. I heard about this the other day and was just really upset about the fact that something like this could be happening really in any city, but in a great city like ours. So I have started a GoFundMe to help restart, and have already started advertising that with my friends, and people have already reached out to donate, and just wanted to let people know that, and to let Restart know there are definitely people out there that care, and just trying to do anything that I can personally, as a Christian and someone that just loves our city, to help out this program.
What's your goal of your GoFundMe effort here, Dave?
I put on there $3 billion because that is what I know was on there. And I know that sounds crazy, but I know that that's what they needed to be raised. And, you know, whatever can be given can help. But, you know, I just think that in the world today, and, you know, especially that we're around Easter time, that, you know, the more people that could hear about this, the more people that can get the message out, that this should be something that should be important in our city.
Well, yeah, Stephanie, I got good news for you. You got $3 billion coming down the pike from Dave from Smithville, it sounds like.
Only $3
million. I think he said $3 million.
$3 million, you said. Okay, Dave. Yeah. I thought you said billion. Okay.
But I'll take $3 billion.
You'll take
two.
Either way.
Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. I just think in our world today that, you know, we have so much money, we have so much power and influence, that something like this just should not be happening, especially in the United States. And, you know, I want to do whatever it takes. And so it's just something that I just woke up and just really felt like it was a calling. So,
Dave, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. And Stephanie, I can't help but wonder, given Restart's history of offering the homeless these beds for so many years, how painful a moment is this for you guys?
Oh, it's super painful. You know, it breaks our heart. I mean, each of these people has a story, and each of these people are a citizen in our community that really need, you know, a hand up. And that's all they're looking for. They really just need a place that they can focus and get things back on track in their life. And to be able to step out of the chaos of having to wonder where they're going to sleep tonight and where they're going to eat, so that they can really focus on what are the steps I need to take to get from point A to point B. Because if you are having to constantly live in that survival mode, you can't focus on accomplishing those things. This is a population that I've spent 20 years of my career really focused on. So for me personally too, it's I know they are an undervalued. They often go unseen in our community. They're very much judged. And, you know, long ago, as I sat down with these folks and started really hearing their stories, they're some of our most resilient citizens in this.
Can you tell us one of those stories, Stephanie? I mean, put a face on this situation for us. maybe someone who's illustrative of the broader issue here.
So, you know, we have people that have many college degrees. We have a gentleman actually now that has multiple college degrees, was very successful, really kind of had a struggle, lost his marriage, which kind of sent the spiral downhill, then lost his job. You know, so many people like him are the victim of bad situations and circumstances, right? One major crisis, much less like when you get hit with multiple crises like that, you know, in a row. And this is not uncommon among all the people that we serve, from these individuals to families to veterans to youth. It is literally oftentimes, it's not just one kind of short straw that got drawn. It's, you know, it's one after the other, and they just compound one another. And people find themselves then sleeping in their car, and then they find themselves having to sell the car to be able to eat. And then now they're on the street. And so they're really, you know, in need of a safe haven like Restart, so that they can begin to put all those pieces of their life back together.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about the shuttering of the homeless portion of Restart's operation at 918 East 9th Street. Some 90 beds for the homeless may be disappearing here in the weeks to come. If you have questions or comments about all this, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We're visiting with Stephanie Boyer. She's the CEO of Restart. So if the facility closes, Stephanie, what happens then? What happens to your residents? Where will they go?
Yeah, that is the challenge. Many of, like I said, the folks that are here, we're really working with them to get ensure that they have a housing plan as they leave. But what that also means right now is that we have people calling and coming every day that we're not able to accept into the program. For many of the folks, they will begin to seek, shelter and programming in other places. But as I mentioned earlier, there's going to be a lot of folks that need way more than just an overnight place to sleep. They need to be able to sleep at different times of the day. They need to be able to, have the support and the wraparound services that I mentioned as well. So we're definitely working with every, partner in the community that might have options for housing for people. Many of them have reached out and said whatever we can do to help, partner with people. But ultimately, what's going to happen is many of these folks are going to be on the street and they're going to be seeking shelter, particularly a lot of our folks in the LGBTQ community. Many of them come to Restart because this is the only place that they feel welcomed and they feel safe. We don't have a religious requirement of people. And oftentimes we find and hear from people that that's a barrier for them seeking shelter and they would rather stay outside. I think unfortunately we will see likely an increase of people on the street. We will see emergency services continue to be even more burdened than they currently are,
Stephanie, how many people a day are you being forced to turn away right now?
We haven't really been tracking the exact number of people. I can tell you that typically this time of year, though, those beds would run at capacity, at 90 people.
Is it five people or is it 30 people a day?
Because they come into the program, there's definitely, right now there's 35 beds that we're not utilizing. So there are definitely 35 people out there currently that, we're turning away, because we're not, opening those beds. But typically because people come into that program and often stay up to about 90 days, even then, there's still times where we're, turning folks away.
How does Restart compare in size with, with other homeless shelters in our area? Is it the largest?
It kind of depends on how you want to break it down. But when you break down all of the different programming that we're doing kind of in this one location, I would say definitely we're the largest because we operate, a youth emergency shelter. We operate a family emergency shelter. We operate adults, veterans, really special populations of folks. So we're really serving everyone from all ages.
So right now it's $1 million only to bring back the beds, right? How much would Restart need to bring back all the support services that have traditionally gone with those beds?
Yeah, so that, begins to be around that $3 million mark that Dave has put out there for us. Mm-hmm. We believe in doing the service in the way that we do it. We believe in providing those wraparound support services because we know it works. And we've seen that success rate. And we've seen, 70% of people exit into a stable housing situation. And the national average for shelter is 45%. So it does cost a little bit more to do service that way. but the return on that investment for that individual and the community is priceless.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to some calls here. And Jim from Midtown. Jim, you're on Up to Date with Stephanie Boyer, the CEO of Restart. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Real quickly, Stephanie, I was of the impression that Restart received a fair amount of money from the United Methodist Church. Has that changed?
I am not aware of any specific dollars from them.
You might be thinking about some other location, Jim.
I might be. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Jim. I appreciate it. It's interesting. I mean, solving homelessness has been compared to a chain. If one link breaks, the whole chain won't work. Explain that concept to us, Stephanie.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's a lot of why Restart for many years has been in the business of kind of every spectrum from prevention, you know, to street outreach, to emergency, to transitional, to permanent housing. Because you need all of those avenues happening at the same time. We have to be working as a community to prevent people from getting into this, you know, falling into this system. And obviously we need affordable housing and we need permanent housing available for people. But it takes time to build those units. It takes time to get those kinds of things subsidized and put together. So in the interim, you have to have the pieces of emergency shelter and transitional housing and all of those support services in order to keep people in a safe, stable place while that, you know, is able to happen for them to get into. Unfortunately, we just don't live in a world where we can just snap our fingers and folks can just have housing necessarily available.
Right.
In particular, when someone has an eviction on their record or has a criminal record or, you know, all of these other things that become these huge barriers for people, we have to work with them to break down each one of those barriers. And that takes time. And so this is why, you know, this kind of interim safe, stable housing piece is so critical because it does take time to kind of work through all of those things
right.
and get a plan.
Let's go back to some calls here. Rich from Overland Park. Rich, you're on Up to Date.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I was one of the founders of Restart a long, long time ago with Stuart Whitney. And at the time we began it, it was because people were freezing to death on the street because they would not go to the other shelter, which was the one that required people to sit through a sermon, and many people rejected that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that requirement is still true of this other shelter, but I would like to ask the director: has the problem of homelessness stabilized at all? And if the government of our country would change a little bit, how much difference would that make to the homeless population?
Yeah, Rich, thank you. Is homelessness, is that as a problem? Is it getting better or worse here, Stephanie?
I mean, I feel like in our community and across the country, we're continuing to see it become a bigger and bigger issue. As affordable housing becomes a bigger and bigger issue, you can look on the East and West Coast and see what's happening with housing costs. And that just continues to work its way into the middle of the country like every other issue. And we've already seen that in our community. We see so many people that come into our program and need us, not because they can't afford anything, but because they can't afford what's available in our community. And so, unfortunately, until I feel like we can either increase prevention dollars or we can really get a lot of affordable housing options available for people, we're going to continue to see that need increase.
You know, you've said that there really shouldn't be any reason why this agency should not be thriving and doing well. I mean, so given that, what are some other reasons why Restart isn't thriving and doing well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from what I've been able to see over the years, I think that, you know, Restart, as Steve just mentioned, you know, was started and founded out of a community need, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so every expansion of Restart since day one has been in response to a community need. you know, that's why we serve every population now. That's why we do work in all of those different arenas, from prevention to emergency housing to permanent housing. and so a lot of what has happened is Restart has always put their hand up and said, like, yes, that's a community need. We will help take that on. We will tackle it. We will address this need. But unfortunately, I think sometimes, you know, the goodness of our heart, and in this world, when we say, yes, we'll do that, maybe every decision wasn't always made with a business model of, like, how are we going to sustain this? The answer was yes, and we'll figure it out, which only works for a little while. Mm-hmm. And so we, you know, have reached that place where it's just mission critical that we really have to stay focused on ensuring that we can only operate programs that, you know, have dollars and can be sustained.
We got an email from a guest here, Stephanie, and the emailer wrote this. The United Methodist Church in Missouri, in response to our previous caller, used to have agencies that were designated ministries that were supported by the church. That ended maybe 10 years ago, and now it's only local churches who might furnish meals or help, but no designated funds. So there you go. Just one more thing before you leave us. How about Sean O'Byrne and the downtown council planning to help here to keep Restart open? Because they have some skin in this game, too, when it comes to preventing an influx of homeless people on the streets of downtown Kansas City.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, I just was at the Downtown Services meeting with Sean this morning. So, you know, we're in conversation, and I know he's in conversation with, you know, their partners as well.
Are you hopeful of some help coming there?
I'm hopeful of help coming from everywhere, right? This is a community issue, and it needs a community solution, and we really need so many different people from the community, you know, raising their hand and stepping up, like, you know, Sean has said to do, and like Dave has done, and, you know, and other people. So that's really, you know, every person has a part to play, big or small.
Well, that's Stephanie Boyer, again, the CEO of Restart, one of the area's largest homeless shelters on the brink of shutting down at least that portion of its business. Stephanie, we'll keep an eye on this, and I hope you'll stay in touch with us as well, okay?
Thanks so much. And appreciate it.
Good luck in the weeks ahead. Yeah, good luck. We'll be watching. Again, Stephanie Boyer, the CEO of Restart. After a short break, we're going to switch topics pretty dramatically, and we're going to talk about how dating mixes with the world of politics these days. Can a Bernie backer date someone who's a Trumper? We'll find out. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Whether you listen to the program every day or only tune in now and then, get more from the show in my weekly newsletter. Sign up now at kcur.org/Kraske for insights from me and highlights from the up-to-date team. It's simple. It's quick. Just go to kcur.org/Kraske to subscribe. Tomorrow, once released from prison, parolees get a second chance at life, but it's not easy to make the most of that chance. We'll meet one former parole officer and explore the flawed system of life after lockup. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, when it comes to dating, the world of politics can be a treacherous minefield, especially these days. So here's the question. Will you date someone if they don't share your political views? Will you date someone if they back President Trump and you happen to back Bernie Sanders? Can love breach that gigantic divide? It's a very hot question these days, maybe more so than ever. And here to help us navigate it is Jennifer Pepus, who's also known as Captain Awkward. She runs an advice column and blog at CaptainAwkward.com. She lives in Chicago. Jennifer, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, so here we go. Is there any way on this good earth that a Trump person could possibly successfully date a Bernie person? Is there a path forward for that couple or not?
I mean, my question is, like, why would you try that? Like, why would you do that?
There could be reasons. There could be reasons.
Why would you do that with your time?
Yeah.
Like, is anyone that – I don't know. Like, I just – I think that our political opinions and also our political actions, the things that we organize for and vote for and fight for – are really part of who we are and how we see the world. And so, you know, it's just like, well, you could – that dude is hot. I guess you could try to convert him to not voting to end, like, reproductive rights for women. Or you could, like, register 10 new voters today with your time. Like,
and your point is good luck with that, right?
Like, I don't know. I think it's – I think for people who found themselves, you know, who were already in relationships and then found themselves, like, being really divided – I think maybe there's more history and more shared, you know, there's obviously something that they have in common. But for people who are just trying to, like, meet people to date now, like, why would you sign up for that difficult project?
Well, I asked one of my classes, I teach up at the university here, I asked one of my classes this question yesterday, and I got all kinds of blank looks when I asked, would anybody here consider, if you're a Democrat, would you consider dating a Republican? Like, nobody in the room was going for that. Doesn't that mark a big change in our culture from even 15, 25 years ago? I mean, the divide didn't used to be this great, but it seems like it's you can't even begin to hop across it in this dating environment.
Well, like, I was I was in college and young and, like, looking to first meet people. I'm an old married lady now, but I was first like looking to meet people, like, in the 90s, and I remember there was, like, James Carville and Mary Madeline. Look at them. He votes Democrat and she's Republican, but, like, they get along. And I'm like,
if folks don't remember who they were, there might be a few out there. James Carville was one of the key aides to Bill Clinton when Clinton was running for the presidency in 92. Mary Madeline was a top aide to George H.W. Bush, and they were running against each other in the general election for the presidency. Those two made a cottage industry out of being a married couple with dynamic different political views.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when I look back at it, is like, were their views so dynamically different? And then also, they're both, like, rich. They do the same job. They're both kind of terrible. And it's just like, they have a lot in common. And I think a lot of the opposing views are, like, it's a little bit of performance art. But when I was in my 20s, that was held up as, like, shouldn't you try to be like them and date across the political divide and show how open-minded you are? And I'm just like, no.
Well, I'm hoping that young folks or those who aren't so young and who are dating out there and want to chime in with their thoughts on this. If you're in the dating pool these days, how are you approaching this whole idea of dating somebody from the opposite political party? Our phone number, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. We'd like to hear from you and get some sense from some real folks out there and what it's like. I mean, it seems to me there are lots of turnoffs out there. There's religious differences, unattractiveness, low educational achievement. But do any of those, you know, come close to topping political differences these days, Jennifer?
Well, I think you should look for people who make you feel safe and relaxed and happy to be around. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like educational differences, like, not necessarily a big deal, but, like, someone who is a super obsessively neat, clean, tidy person and someone who's a little more messy, like, it's just, you know, going in, you're going to fight all the time. And so there's just going to be there's going to be stuff that you're always having to kind of, like, bite your tongue, and that's going to grate you. And, like, maybe love is enough to conquer it, but you're sort of setting yourself up to play life a little bit on hard mode. And with political differences, like I said, I think it's like, what kind of world do you live in and what's the work that you're doing to make that world real? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't know if – I think we all have people in our families that are on the other side from us politically, and we have that history again and love and, like, good memories and to try to find something in common with them. But if you just met someone and you're like, this is – this person is going to, like, we're going to fight about this all the time forever. Just, I don't know, swipe left. Yeah. Like, just
816-235-2888. Would you consider dating somebody from the opposite political party from the one you are these days? We're eager to find out. Let's go to some calls. Russ from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, to put it in a nutshell, it's all the rage to say we should be open-minded and open to alternative points of view and things like that. And while that's generally true, that's not always true. Sometimes there are not two sides to an argument. I mean, apart from that it gave gainful employment to some, find an upside to Dachau or Buchenwald. Some gulfs, even with a starship, are not meant to be crossed.
Hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah. How do you respond to that, Stephanie? Oh, Jennifer, what do you say to that? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, I mean, exactly, yeah. It. And the idea that, like, there's certain positions that and certain policies that, you know, the current administration is pursuing that, like, when people talk about, like, well, I'm a moderate about that. And I'm like, so you want to find the middle between, like, concentration camps and not concentration camps.
Right,
like, you're trying
right.
to find that sweet middle
spot. Yeah, right.
I don't understand that on any level, like a voting level, on a personal level. But then if I'm trying to date someone, like, you know, just that seems like a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the 15 years ago, 20 years ago, like, it was less polarized. I think we had more of a fiction that there was a middle between mm-hmm. the sides, and recent events have kind of just really ripped the mask off that.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, it seems like dating service after dating service has found pretty much the same thing, that nothing these days trumps, there's that word, trumps political differences, you know, in terms of a turnoff when it comes to dating somebody.
I don't know. I just think about, like, how so much about dating and being in a relationship is, like, what do you want to do with your time?
Right, right.
Like, what do you want to do with your energy?
Yeah.
And is the person going to make you support you in what you want to do with your time and make you feel, like, affirmed and comfortable and just...
Instead of just something completely the opposite. Yeah, absolutely. Lake from Leawood. Lake, you're on Up to Date. Good morning. You there, Lake?
Yeah, so I personally feel that too many people invalidate the opinions of individuals on the opposite political party, and I think we forget that they're human as well. And so I think it's perfectly reasonable to date outside of your political party as long as you have something in common.
But how do you handle the constant level of disagreements that Jennifer is pointing to here?
Well, I think you have to consider that both Republicans and Democrats have similar goals. They both want to end poverty. The main difference is the way they want to go about achieving those goals. And so I think in a relationship between a Democrat and a Republican, instead of focusing on your differences, I think you could make it work by focusing on commonalities between the two. Where can you find common ground?
Well, I think members of Congress are having an awful, awful hard time, Lake, these days, trying to find common ground on anything.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. But what I'm talking about is the average person in the way you approach the situation of dating.
Yeah. Well, Lake, I appreciate the phone call. Jennifer, there's one vote for maybe that it's possible, right?
Well, I think, Lake, you sound like someone who's an optimist and you have a good heart and you're trying to sort of see the common ground. And I would like us to get maybe back to that as a country. But I think right now I don't think both sides are the same or share the same goals. Mm-hmm. And I also think that I do think that there's a case for organizing and, again, political action and outreach where it is about finding that shared humanity and the shared things that we want and really listening and talking to each other. But does that have to be done with, like, through, like, who you're sleeping with?
Yeah.
Like, is that the and can't, when you're trying to find someone to like share your life with, and, like, again, where are you going to put your time and your energy? Do you want to have to be doing that all the time at home in your fun free time?
Well, speaking of who you're sleeping with, we got a tweet from Courtney who writes this: my mom and stepdad slept in separate bedrooms for 2 weeks after the 2016 election. They eventually decided the 25-year marriage wasn't worth throwing out, but things have definitely changed. We no longer talk about anything, all in capital letters, political at family gatherings. Too much fighting. Smart advice, perhaps.
Well, I think that's a really common way that people handle it is like, my grandfather was very like active politically and vocal politically and like didn't agree with the rest of the family. And at holiday meals, my grandmother was really famous for just being like, look, we have a secret ballot for a reason. Let's not talk about it. And I think that
good line.
around the holidays, I get tons of letters at my site that are like, how am I going to get through this? And, you know, having the hosts of family gatherings be like, OK, we're not going to talk about politics tonight, you know, is one way of coping. But I think when we say like we're not going to talk about politics, like let's agree that we don't talk about politics. Sometimes we're saying a couple of different things with that.
Right.
It's like there's the like this is fun time and we're all obsessed with the news the rest of the time. But let's try to block this out as connecting fun time. And then there's like we can't talk about politics because if you say your politics out loud and I say my politics out loud, all the things we don't have in common will be on the table right now. And then we can't think about anything else.
Will you date somebody from the opposite political party? That's our topic here. We're visiting with Jennifer Pipas, also known as Captain Awkward. She runs an advice column and blog at CaptainAwkward.com. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Roger from North Kansas City, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate this conversation. So I'm married to a Republican. I'm a Democrat, and we knew from early on we had different political beliefs. And I think what can help relationships like that work, so I'm the unusual one. I'm the one who follows politics closely. I have, pretty just down-the-line liberal beliefs. My spouse is like most Americans. She is a Republican, and in general she's more economically and socially conservative, but she doesn't follow politics very closely. And her beliefs are not doctrinal. So she's Republican, but she, like most people who have a party identification, her beliefs are kind of all over the map. And so I think that for many Americans who just don't follow politics that closely, it's really not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Not that big of a deal, Jennifer.
Well, I mean, I think that that is a – Roger. You know, I think that is true in terms of like – If you're not someone who really follows politics, maybe you have more wiggle room to sort of not really think about it. But that also comes from a like that also tells me that this is somebody who doesn't really think that politics affect them very much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of people that feel that way, like, oh, they're all the same. It doesn't really matter. My life's going to be. You know, my life's going to be equally hard or easy depending on who's, you know, in power. And like, you know, it doesn't really matter. So why argue about this?
Right.
And that, you know, and if you are someone that feels that way and if you are someone that that's true for you, then like you're lucky, I guess. But like, you know, I'm married to someone with a disability. We're depending on like the ACA to be able to get health care at all. There's certain things it's just like, well, if politics go one way, everyone in my house has a harder time being alive anymore.
And if
politics go the other way, I guess, you know, like we get to be alive. Yay.
Right.
And
right.
So when it is like people who are really affected, I don't know how to be someone who's like, oh, I guess I'm just not going to worry about it because it does affect me.
Right. Let me go back to Jay from Overland Park. Jay, good morning. You're on Up to Date.
Good morning. Interesting topic. My wife and I met 15 years ago, married 11 years ago. She was a lifelong Democrat. I was a lifelong Republican. And we had a lot to celebrate as far as where we were at that point in our life about different things that we had in common. What has changed, I think, is that it's a more of a toxic environment now than it was 15 years ago, 10 years ago. And I am no longer Republican. I'm an independent now. And I just think it's become more toxic for a lot of reasons, for all the talk show, radio, our television shows that are inundated as far as polarizing people. It all contributes to that. But I think it's a harder environment to have those two different directions that you're trying to meld into a marriage than it was previously.
And how are you guys managing these days, Jay?
Oh, we're doing great.
Yeah.
We're doing great. We're both on the same wavelength as far as where we see the country going. And I am a constant, or I get a hold of my senators frequently as far as emails and phone calls.
Right.
Not that it's doing any good,
right.
But we report back to each other on that contribution.
All right. Jay, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have a tweet here from M. Ellie, sort of down the same lines as our last caller. My husband and I were politically at opposite sides, each longtime opposite party supporters until 2016. We both switched to the middle of the road and became more independent in our views. I think it's that neither one of us can identify with extremes of either the Democrats or the Republicans these days. Interesting switch for that couple. Jennifer, how often does this issue arrive as you go about your Captain Awkward advice column?
Not very often, because I think people like know that, you know, my political views are pretty left. I don't write that much about political topics on the blog, but it's not like a secret kind of where I fall.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are more right wing are probably going to find a different person to like write into.
Yeah.
But the thing about becoming more independent, the last two callers I thought were very interesting, because I'm an independent. I'm not a member of a party. And I think that's an interesting thing of like, is politics your identity? Like, you have a political party and you're like, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, or I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. Or is it a thing about your views, like these are the things I feel and think in the world and this party kind of aligns with that? Or is it an action that you do, like this is the kind of world I want to make, so these are the things I'm going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people who have it, like when people talk about it being like way more toxic, sometimes that identity, it's like, is it a brand? It's not like a sports team, right? Like you can root for It's like, think of it as like watching the Olympics, where
right.
like you just want people to do well.
Right.
Not like such a team. But I thought that's interesting that a lot of people are becoming more independent.
Yes,
and I think that is actually maybe good, of like divorcing the idea from party loyalty and identity into, well, who's doing what I want to see happen in the world and how can I help that happen?
So these days, if you go to dating websites, which I guess is something I haven't done in a while, how often do you have to disclose which party you support?
I think it's also something I have not done in a while, but I have seen I sometimes help my readers like write their online dating profiles. So I like still have a toe in the water. And I think people will self-select in a lot of ways. Like they will just put it out there like no Republicans wanted, or they'll put, you know, there's the guys that will put their MAGA hat on.
Right.
And so I think people are like, you can self-select about it.
Right.
I think there was there was an article in one of the D.C. like magazines about like all the little Republican dudes in D.C. that were like, no one will date us.
Yeah.
And so people are sometimes people are more circumspect about it because they're like, how about they like me first and then they find out.
Jennifer, let me grab a quick call before I got to close the show.
Sure.
Leanne from Grandview. I got 30 seconds, Leanne.
Hey, it was timely. So I'm considering going on a date with a Republican. I guess I would consider myself Democrat.
Now why are you doing that, Leanne?
Well,
are you just inviting a world of hurt here?
It's been a long time. It's been a long time, and he's an old high school flame, and so I thought I'd give it a chance. But just through our conversations, he's being more and more conservative, and I'm more and more liberal, and so it's a concern.
Well, I hope you'll call us back and let us know how it went, Leanne. We'll be eager to hear. Thanks for the phone call. And Jennifer Pipas, again, known as Captain Awkward, CaptainAwkward.com. Thanks for your time today as well. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Stephen. Thanks for all the callers. They gave us a lot of food for thought.
They sure did. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Chelsea Angstrom. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.